Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
This week on Underdogs, we've reached the pinnacle of the NBA in-season tournament. We've reached the pinnacle of Peter being last NFL picks, and things are going to get even wilder from there.
The cry goes up both far and near for Underdog.
Underdog.
Countdown going on right now. Morrow, up to Schultz. 5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
By George, the dream is alive.
Underdog.
Then I guess there's only one thing left to do. Win the whole fucking thing.
It's the Underdogs back with you, and we are coming to you live, well, live for us, from the Meadowlark office studios, a first for our show. The bad news, it means Peter and I are in the same location, which could lead to some terrible things. The good news is we're joined by our special guest, a member of the Meadowlark family, the host of Oddball. She also writes a Substack called The Wilder Things. Please welcome Charlotte Wilder to the program.
Oh, gee, thanks. I must say co-host with Amin El Hassan because, you know, we're a democracy here at Meadowlark. But I'm so thrilled to be joining you guys. Thank you for having me.
I was attempting to piss off Amin. Now that is failed. But we've got a lot of basketball to discuss today.
You were trying to lure him onto the show.
Say it again there.
You were trying to lure him onto the show, not irritating.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Equal time, right?
Yeah.
So, we are recording this on Wednesday. So, tomorrow night, we've got the semifinals of the in-season tournament. And the in-season tournament in and of itself is sort of an underdog, right? It's a new idea in a sporting culture that maybe doesn't embrace new ideas. Mm-hmm. So, now that we're this far in, what do we think? Charlotte, lead us off. Is this working?
Yes. I actually just wrote a Substack called The NBA's In-Season Tournament is Working. I think, you know, my feeling about it the whole time from when this was announced, and I was talking to some people at Summer League, you know, a million years ago now about this, was I think this is an if you build it, they will come situation. I think that what December basketball needed was a reason for people to care. And everyone's like, oh, I don't care about the in-season tournament. I don't know if it's going to work. I'm like, well, you will. Because by nature of it happening, we will be talking about it. And unless it's just like a total disaster and players super don't care, but it's been the opposite. We've seen everyone's been playing super hard. It's been a proven ground and a stage, I think, for people like Tyrese Halliburton. It was only his second nationally he'd never been on TNT before Tuesday. Sorry, when was that? My brain.
Yeah,
is,
Tuesday.
Yeah.
Was it?
Okay. Monday.
My brain is scrambled eggs, guys. Too much in-season tournament. But the other night.
the other night.
And, you know, to see what he can do. And now you have Vegas coming up, which is a spectacle in and of itself. Who's not going to want to watch that? It's also you have double headers. We've never had that in NBA game. I mean, I'm obsessed with this, guys. I can't get enough. Like last night, I texted me and I was like, I've got the fever.
And I think to your point, clearing the schedule to make this work and make it a showcase is great. And I also think our buddy Howard Beck wrote this in a column recently that traditions are really hard to establish, right? Mm-hmm. But they also, you know, you don't know when something's going to become a tradition. So, look, European soccer has decades of these types of competitions, but, like, nobody set out to make everyone at Fenway sing Sweet Caroline. It just sort of happened. So some of these things just have to organically
build. Is that a tradition we approve of? by the way, how wrong was I? I said, why the hell are we going to be watching a Pelicans-Timberwolves game with any more attention in November than we used to pay in the middle of the dead of winter in February? Okay, completely wrong. Turns out the NBA is great with a build-up and a show and an event and something you want to see before Christmas, just in time for the league because they're going to renegotiate their media rights coming up, and this will help double or triple the value of their streaming package and their TV package. Great for the league, but also great for players, great for emerging teams, and particularly great because, you know, NFL quality of play hasn't been great. And when the NFL is the only show in town and it's on Thursdays and Mondays and Sundays and coming soon Saturdays, turns out you actually want to be able to watch something else, and the games have been compelling.
So I think there were a couple obstacles that had to be conquered to make this work, right? One is you got to get the players to buy in. They've got to care. And by all evidence, they do. I was talking to a friend of mine who's an assistant coach, asked him point blank, is there a difference? And he said, look, we try to win every game, but the players definitely know when it's a tournament game.
Yeah.
And
there were reports of players yelling out tournament when they were being asked by fans and like writers why they were running up the scores in these games.
They're in. So that's number one. And second,
by
is,
the way, Jordan, the money. They set the money right. I mean, $500,000 for the winner is almost as much as a two-way player makes on a minimum salary.
Totally. And stars want to do this for their teammates.
Right.
So then the second thing obviously is, do the fans care? Well, all the metrics are saying yes, right? Ratings are up over comparable windows from last year. Attendance is up. It's not to say there aren't a couple tweaks that are necessary. I still think they need a better way to sort of identify games in the group stage against other. I just still found it a little confusing, and I think the casual fan definitely found it confusing. The other thing is, I'm not so sure it needs to be this early. I was thinking that what if you had the finals of this around at Christmas?
See, I actually disagree. I think that this is the time when you need it the most. When it first started, I was talking to some people who were like, you know, I think it is too early. And I was like, no, I want this now. I need a reason to be invested in a storyline leading up to Christmas. Christmas, you have the Christmas games. After that, sure, January, February, you've got to contend with the NFL still, but you have a Paris game on January 11th. And then it's the NBA is the biggest show in town. So I do think I like that it's the lead up to Christmas. I think it gets everybody a little bit locked in and jazzed earlier. I also think, to your earlier point, that the buy-in from players, I don't think we get a game like Celtics Pacers on a random Monday night if it's not an in-season tournament game. I don't think the Bucks go off the way they did on Tuesday night against the Knicks. I don't think we are, you know, arguing about whether the refs made the wrong call when they gave the Lakers a timeout at the end of a Suns-Lakers game in December if this isn't on that stage.
I think you're probably right on that front. I do think that if you had a little more of a lead up to just get your feet wet. First of all, people are excited at the beginning of the season because it's the beginning of the season. And I want to reserve judgment until we're sitting here in January and therefore we're still feeling the doldrums. And now we're wishing, okay, maybe we wish we had, especially with a shorter preseason, a couple more weeks to warm up and get play going in a little better quality and then start it and then took us further into the season.
Okay, but the willingness to experiment in itself
is a great quality.
It's great.
Yes.
And you know, it's like with baseball. They change around rules to see what happens. You see what happens and you adjust. So many, I won't even say fans, so many long-term fans and sports writers act as though the rules we have now have been the rules forever and they're somehow hallowed, they're not worthy of ever being adjusted. Adjust them on the fly. Figure it out. Maybe a better form will take place in 2 or 3 years.
Sure.
But I'll tell you something else. In the meantime, we get to evaluate, pay attention to emerging teams and wonder if they're for real and players a lot earlier than we would, you know, we gain our attention.
Well,
it's a lot of fun.
The other cool thing for us right now is we are in a one-and-done tournament. And as our listeners know, that's Peter and I sort of made our chops doing giant killers and bracket breakers for the NCAA tournament, mm-hmm. a one-and-done scenario that doesn't always translate to the NBA. So, guys, let's talk about these semifinals coming up. We've got the Lakers against the Pelicans. The Lakers are a two-point favorite, so basically close to a pick 'em. And then you got the Bucks playing the Pacers. The Bucks are favored by 4.5. Charlotte, start mm-hmm. with you. Do you have any feel for, again, if this was a 7-game series, I think we both would go a certain way. In a one-and-done scenario, what are you seeing from these teams?
Oh, I think that the Pacers have a great chance. I think the way that Tyrese Halliburton is playing, I was lucky enough to see him in person. It's even more mind-blowing in person. He has such control. He is so in control, and they play so fast. And the Bucks are the oldest team in the league. And I haven't really seen people talk about that. But they kind of have to play faster against a team like the Pacers, and that becomes harder if you don't have the young core that the Pacers have. And so, you know, am I like, yes, definitely the Pacers are going to win? No, because we saw if the Bucks can hit every three, you can't really do anything about it.
Yeah, but if you don't play any defense at all, the Bucks will score 146 points.
Exactly, but I think that there is an actual shot. And when it comes to the Pelicans, I actually think that it's more likely that the Pacers will win than the Pelicans because LeBron has been so locked in to this tournament. they have the best record, and he in this tournament, or maybe the Bucks do too. Everybody's doing great. But LeBron is just like, when you give him something to win or to care about or to compete for, I'm never betting against
LeBron's
him.
Willpower mm-hmm. is so strong.
Yeah.
It enables him to call timeouts when his team doesn't have possession of the ball.
I mean.
But I agree. Give me Indiana. Give me Indiana as a pretty good shot to win this whole thing.
Yeah.
Halliburton is obviously special, emerging superstar. But Jordan, you and I as Knicks fans watched Obi Toppin for a long time. He could always penetrate. He would always help the team if it was a little thudding along. But he often seemed to be shooting off his back foot or off balance or something. Jordan, he's found spacing. He said his goal this year was to hit 35% of his threes. He's at 37%. And he's leading the league in two-point field goal percentage because he's getting to the rim. It's not just that. Buddy Hield, they've been fielding offers for Buddy Hield forever. Mm-hmm. The Lakers are ready to give him D'Angelo Russell or buy to number two picks. Well, you know what? Buddy Hield's a high-volume, high-efficiency three-point shooter. Maybe he's better off helping Toppin and Halliburton than he is helping an aging LeBron. When Toppin and Hield are on the floor together, okay, the team is hitting 43% of their threes. Their assist-to-turnover ratio is over 3-1. They're out-blocking teams by huge margins because they are in the right positions. Mm-hmm. And they're plus 13.2 points over every 100 possessions. And they're the two best players. They're functioning as the two best players with Halliburton on the court. It is really cool and fun and fast and high-volume, high-scoring to watch.
I want to get back to something Charlotte said, because what I'm still wondering as we learn about this tournament is whether there is a motivation gap between any of the teams and players. So I agree with you that this is another thing for LeBron to be able to add to the mantle, right? Like, mm-hmm. I won how many titles? I won All-Stars, MVPs. I also won the inaugural in-season tournament.
You know
it's
who
cool.
never won an in-season tournament?
Me?
Michael Jordan.
Yeah, and me.
So and Jordan Brenner.
Yeah. So we have a lot in common.
I have, right. But I don't mean to brag.
We don't talk about that.
No, sorry.
Research is still out on
continue.
Bill Russell.
So we know LeBron, fine. Fanatic will go nuts. Maybe the most competitive person in the NBA I've seen in recent years is Giannis, because if you watch him in the All-Star game, mm-hmm. he plays harder than anyone. It's the great, what was it, 2 years ago when the initial Elam ending one where they actually all of a sudden Kyle Lowry's taking charges and they were
yeah.
He was at a different level of competitiveness.
Yeah.
So you know he's gonna go balls out for something like this. Then the flip side is the Bucks are obviously serious title contenders. The Lakers fancy themselves as them. As much as I like the Pelicans, I don't think they're there yet.
But they've got something to prove.
The Pacers aren't. But what I'm saying is the Pacers aren't. So these two franchises' chance to say, oh, we can win something. So I don't know that there's any edge to be found in the end in this motivation.
I don't think so either. I guess the one thing you could say is, you know, if the Lakers or Bucks win and lose, it can be like, well, we weren't trying as hard because we have such high expectations. But I
don't think we're going to get that.
I don't either. Yeah. And I do think that for the Pacers to win this, I've said this on Oddball, on Dan Le Batard now, but if Adam Silver has a team, you know, I was saying the Knicks would be the ideal team to win because, you know, fans would be like, hang the banner, start the parade.
Yeah.
And you need a
confetti.
Fan base. You need a desperate fan base to win this. And every fan base is desperate in their own way. Like, as a Celtics fan, I'm desperate to watch them not choke away a big game in a big moment, as I've been seeing for the past, you know, 8 years now. But mm-hmm. as Pacers, they haven't come close to
right.
the final. They haven't,
that fan base is actually pretty
touched,
hungry.
Yeah, they haven't
well,
touched any
right.
sort of chance at hardware. And if you have a fan base that gets that chance, and then when it rolls around next year, everyone in Indiana is like, oh, here we go, baby, it's our time.
Right.
That's really good.
I would say the same thing about the Pelicans. At least the Pacers have played in the NBA Finals. This Pelicans franchise has had misfortune after misfortune,
yes.
and this is also a chance.
I guess I just think it's more likely that the Pacers will do it, which is what I'm saying.
I think this is a chance to recast Zion in a superstar light, which is faded a little bit. There's been some issues of various kinds, not the least of which are his injury problems. But, okay, all of a sudden you get him on a national stage, healthy, playing well. This team is an exciting team with a lot of good, young, versatile players. I think that's a chance from a marketing perspective to get him back in the consciousness.
We also need to mention our show favorite, tough as nails,
Herb Jones.
Herb Jones, who is
That's a deep cut, Peter.
Fantastic defender,
mm-hmm.
and who is, I mean, he plays as motivated as anybody in the entire league, and he is, people are about glue, he is glue, and it maybe he gets a little attention. Some of these underdogs get attention on the national stage.
Don't you feel like Herb Jones should be a player from like the 50s ABA?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Okay, great.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. Well, in terms of attention, it's not just the in-season tournament that deserves attention. We've got some notable underdogs who weren't fortunate enough to be in this stage, and we're going to get to that right after this.
Underdog. Underdog.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Underdog. Underdog.
We're back, Peter, Charlotte. Let's get into some non-in-season tournament teams. There have been a lot of surprises in the league this year, which is awesome. Obviously, one particular team is near and dear to my heart because regular listeners may recall my deep cut pick to make the playoffs this year prior to the season. That's right. The 14-6 Orlando Magic. Even I couldn't have predicted they'd be winning 70% of their games.
You know when youthful people say something is low key something?
Yeah.
You know, this is not low key.
There's nothing humble about this.
This is not deep cut. This is Jordan gloating. But why the hell not? Orlando's been playing great and they're fun. But people talk about teams that work hard or max effort teams. This is a team that they play like their feet are on fire. They've beaten the Lakers by 19, the Bucks by 15, the Celtics by 17. This is an exciting team to watch.
What's cool about the Magic, first of all, third best defense in the league, playing great at that end. But, Peter, we've long talked about characteristics of a giant killer in college basketball, right? It's teams that maximize the possession game. Well, the Magic are second in the league in forcing turnovers. That's right. 16.8% of opponents' possessions. They're seventh in offensive rebounding, and they're third in defensive rebounding. So they're doing it on an NBA level. It's really cool. I think, obviously, we're seeing Paolo Banchero emerge into a star before our eyes. Franz Wagner is just a fantastic role player. They're like one high scoring guard away from being really scary, but like Jalen Suggs is finally starting to play like we thought he would. Cole Anthony's given them points off the bench. They've been doing it without Wendell Carter, and Markel Fultz has been hurt too. So there's an even higher ceiling.
Yeah. That to me, the fact that their roster, they haven't had a complete team and they're still doing this. You know, Jamal Mosley, if he's not Coach of the Year, something is severely broken in the voting. They're also number four in defensive rating overall, which I think is huge. You know, it's dads loves to say defense wins championships. And I think in a league where, I mean, you know, Bucks, Knicks, there was nary a defense to be found. It's like Bill Murray in Space Jam. He says, Mike, you know, I don't play defense. I think that's actually a huge advantage over a lot of these teams.
It also can be, I'm gonna contradict myself here. Teams that play defense in the regular season, it can be a bit of a mirage, right? Because if you're playing harder than most other teams in the regular season,
Yeah. You
can mask a talent deficiency. So you get into the playoffs, suddenly everybody's raised their game.
Yeah, do it in the playoffs.
Right? Like, okay, now everybody's playing defense. So I think that's the, you know, slow your roll a little bit. But I also think like they're positioned where if they want to, and I'm not sure this is the year yet, but if they wanted to make a move, they've got a lot of young guards, they've got assets. I don't think Zach LaVine is the right guy because I don't think he's a winning player, but someone of that, a more efficient version of Zach LaVine in the backcourt, if that type of player became available, Orlando's a really interesting landing spot.
I think that you mentioned Wendell Carter. He got hurt a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
Since he's been out, the guys who replaced him are playing fantastic.
Are you a big Goga Batadze fan?
Well, yes, but I mean, even bigger Moritz Wagner
Mo Wagner,
fan.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, I mean, he's shooting 71% from inside. Mm-hmm. And he's got this pick and roll thing going with a guy we have to mention because it's the season, Joe Ingles, also known as Jingles and Jingly Joe. I mean, if you want, he's got something going with Mo. And
Mojo.
It's been
their mojo working.
I was a row behind Mo when he got drafted.
Seminal moments in your life, where is that rank?
You know, I got married this year, so second.
Okay. That's fine.
Oh, well, okay.
But you know how you have players where like you've reported on them or you see them you're like, I have nothing to do with this person, but I have a soft spot for them just because I was adjacent to them at some point.
You have 100%. One like that? Did you see Sue Bird at the analytics conference?
I've got like a dozen like that.
Yeah, I sat near Billy Butler's family at a Futures game once, and after that I was like outraged whenever people didn't appropriately value him.
Well, speaking of teams I have...
But wait, can I mention one other thing?
No.
Orlando's got a payroll that's only, what is it? It's $132 million this year. It's 29th in the league, dropping to 85 next year.
Right, because their best players haven't reach second contract.
Exactly.
Right.
So I'm not sure they need to make the move to trade away a lot of that to bring back somebody, because they're going to have a lot of flexibility just by letting this float for a season. Maybe they just want to let it break out.
Well, a team that's in a similar position, but maybe even more talented, is the Thunder.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Giddey's situation aside, because that is tricky and certainly affects the direction of the franchise, I don't think anyone saw Shai Gilgeous-Alexander becoming a star of this magnitude a couple years ago. Chet Holmgren's great. Where do we think this team's ceiling is? Because they shocked everybody last year. Now they're 13-6, second in the Western Conference. Is this team a legit contender to win the West? How seriously do we take them?
I think you have to take them pretty seriously. I think at this point, you know, we've seen a lot from them. Chet Holmgren is, you know, over Wembanyama now to be Rookie of the Year. And I think that is, when you have a rookie playing that well, I would not, other than the fact that he's so tall that it's like, you know, the injury situation, I don't want to bet against that. At the same time, I do think this is a situation. I mean, if they didn't have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, we wouldn't be talking about this. So I think that they have a little bit of security in the fact that he does play like a superstar. I do still think the wheels can come off. I think that it's early. I think they are young. I think it would be incredible if they make it, you know, if they can. Winning the West just seems a little bit crazy to me because of the lack of experience. I think you need a few more guys who've been there before and able to be like, okay, this is what it's like when it gets really, really hard.
Well, and they're another team. They're ahead of schedule. They have a zillion assets. They have everybody's draft pick. So whenever Sam Presti decides he wants to make a move, and it's a really difficult situation to manage, because player retention there is not the easiest task either, as we've seen over the years. So, I mean, Sam's great at what he does, but that's straddling that line between using those picks to maintain the stability of the franchise versus cashing in if a star player becomes available, tricky.
They're 2 years ahead of where I thought they were. I mean, and that's just makes the whole caboodle so much fun to watch, because I mean, they're a year or two ahead of where they should be. It's fun. And I don't know if I trust Holmgren to be as great as he looks, but Shai Gilgeous-Alexander looks like a superstar right there, right in front of him.
How did you pronounce his name?
Who?
Shai's
Chet Holmgren?
No.
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
SGA?
SGA. We need a new nickname?
Air Canada?
SZA?
Look, they're outscoring teams by 8 points per 100 possessions. That's second in the league. It's not that they're not just doing this with smoke and mirrors.
Right.
They're beating people down. A team that's basically tied with them in net rating, and the only team they trail in the Western Conference standings, is the Timberwolves. Full disclosure, I bet they're under on wins this year. So
trust in Timberwolves.
Yeah, so I did not expect this, despite the fact that I think we all saw the Anthony Edwards star turn coming. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, this is the best possible situation for the Wolves and for the league, that Anthony Edwards takes what he did over the summer with Team USA and turns it into doing it in the NBA. And I think Rudy Gobert, I feel like part of the shenanigans around Rudy Gobert actually serve as sort of a distraction that allow the Timberwolves to sneakily be better than people think they are. And I think that, you know, you could say it's a distraction in a way that it distracts the team. I think it actually is more of a distraction for opposing teams. I think they, you know, it was funny because when Draymond choked Rudy Gobert out and his teammates didn't exactly rush to defend him.
Just imagine, you just said that sentence, by the way. Like, as a matter of fact, when Draymond choked Rudy Gobert.
I try to get it in every show that I'm on.
It's Thursday, you know?
Yeah,
it's something you see every time, every day for breakfast.
But I think that they have found a way to make all of it work. I mean, they're 15-4. That is way beyond where I thought they would be.
They spent 10 days, okay, as the outright number one in the West.
Yeah.
Over the first 34 seasons of their franchise, they hit 10 days in first place on December 1st. It's amazing. This is also amazing. Last year, Karl-Anthony Towns and Gobert played together in only 27 games, and they were plus 2.2 per 100 possessions when they're on the court together. That's not overwhelming.
No.
This year it's up to 7.6, and it's further amped by two guys who just make the big guys work together. One is Mike Conley. The other is the unsung Kyle Anderson, who they call their security blanket, but makes a lot of these big lineups work. I love this story because it was an interesting experiment. It wasn't doomed to fail or destined to succeed, but bad luck was horrible in derailing them, and so were injuries. And I'm glad to see the experiment get a chance.
I love when teams zig when everyone's zagging. That's just a in all sports.
That's just a pithier way of saying what I was bloviating about.
Well, what I was going to say though is that look, we still have to see a situation where Rudy doesn't get played off the court in the playoffs. Okay, that still is a lingering issue. I still don't know if playing two bigs ultimately works for them defensively. I will say this, Kat's playing great. He's having a 50-40-90 season right now at 6'10". So, like, that needs to be acknowledged, and I think it helps that sort of, like, he might not naturally be the alpha. Like, having Ant do his thing, like, is letting him just stand out there and shoot.
Yep.
I still think they're a player away. I've loved Mike Conley forever. He's old.
It's going to be hard to get that player. Their payroll is $165 million now.
A-Rod will find a way.
I mean, everyone knows it's going up to 190s. We got to get it done now, and I think they got to get it done with these guys. We got to see if the big guys play together well enough to take like a team like Denver farther than they did last year. I think it's got
to
be now.
To wrap this up, I will say that it's Minnesota, and that fan base is not allowed to have nice things, so let's not jinx it for them.
That's a good point.
Underdog, underdog.
It is time for the week 14. God, are we really in week 14 already? The week 14 NFL Underdogs Contest. We are joined again by our guest, Charlotte Wilder, co-host of Oddball. Check it out if you don't already, wherever you get podcasts.
And watch us on YouTube.
And watch them on YouTube.
And the DraftKings Network.
Leave comments on YouTube.
Yeah, please. Like and subscribe.
And read her Substack.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, well, you guys are too kind.
Got it. If you can read.
I'm confident that most of us encountering this podcast can get to Substack and read it.
All right. Well, what's not reading well lately is your performance in the Underdogs Contest.
What a terrible Sieg, and how true that is.
You have gone from first to worst. Coming into this week, the standings are as follows. Team Sarah, as it's known, our producer Sarah McCrory and our various guests leading the way with 28.5 points, followed by Sarah's big 3-point win with the Packers over the Chiefs last week.
It's a pick she stole from me.
Coming in second with a bang, me. 20.5 points. I had the Steelers giving me 2 points with an outright win against the Cardinals last week. And Peter, after an 0-for-2 week, is languishing at 18.5 points. As a reminder, we have to pick underdogs. The spread has to be 3 or greater. Mm-hmm. You get 1 point if they cover. You get an additional point if they win outright. And if they were a 6-point dog or more and went outright, you get a third point. So,
and it doesn't matter if the Saints outgained the Lions.
Oh, yeah, we had
greater
our
time of possession.
Yeah.
Outplayed them in every single way. If you lose by more than, or fail to cover by 1 point.
Yeah.
But if you lose by 1 point, all of that stuff is meaningless, which in other contexts we would be decrying. We would say this is all regress to the mean.
I'm sorry. I think we had a side bet last week, if I remember last week's show. I had the Lions, you had the Saints, and I believe you have to do next week's show with your shirt off.
I thought I had to buy you a healthy lunch.
Oh, fine. One of those two. I can't remember. Anyway, Charlotte.
Those two things are inconsistent.
Yeah. The whole board is yours.
Okay.
Lead us off.
Oh, my gosh.
Top pick.
Okay, I'm going to do something controversial.
Do it.
Do it.
And you guys are going to be like, why did you do that? Also, shout out Sarah. I'm going to try not to tank your first place here. I'm going to take the Giants.
Are you Sarah? Like, oh, is she channeling
did
you?
Did Sarah pay you?
No, shockingly.
This is amazing.
I forgot until right now that she's a huge Giants fan. No, I'm going to take the Giants at okay. Packers because, yes, Packers beat the Chiefs. Jordan Love's cooking. They looked good. But I sort of feel like Tommy DeVito just might come up with this. They're at home. He's been named the starter over Tyrod Taylor, which is sort of shocking. But also he said, like, I don't take this job for granted. Like, this is something I have to earn. And I think, you know, he's living at home with his mom. He has a lot of time. He doesn't have to deal with the adult garbage we have to deal with. He can just focus on football. So I'm taking the Giants at +6.5.
Well, yeah, it's a good strategic play, too, because at 6.5, you're eligible for that all-important third bonus point if they win outright. So, yeah. Well, you took – I pick second here. You took my favorite team, so I will respond – by taking your favorite team.
No, don't do it.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God.
I am casting my lot with Bailey Zappi.
Holy cannoli.
And taking the Patriots +6 at the Steelers in a Thursday night slop fest that currently features an over-under of 30.
I can't believe you're doing this.
I just don't think... I don't know this. Look, the Patriots are barely a football team, but I don't know if the Steelers are beating anybody by 6, let alone in this, you know, Mitch Trubisky. At quarterback.
All right.
That team's offense is terrible. They have a winning record through smoke and mirrors all year. They don't win by margins. And again, in a low scoring game that's, you know, projected to be in the teens, a 6-point margin is very significant. So, do you think the Pittsburgh Steelers will score? Patriots defense, by the way, just held Justin Herbert to 6 points. Now, I don't know if the Patriots will score, but I think they can keep this close enough. Maybe Patriots defense scores a touchdown. Special teams.
I'm pretty sure if you just picked against Pittsburgh all season, you might be in first. If any of us had done that, you might be in first place in this contest.
So give me, and plus again, 6-point line, I am eligible for the extra point. So
okay,
it works for me. So Patriots +6 against the Steelers. We go to Peter with back-to-back picks.
All right, for my first pick, give me the Rams +7 against Baltimore. 24%. Of the bets, but 75% of the money on this game is on the Rams. The big money is on the Rams. They found something in Kyren Williams. He can run off tackle. He's also good in space. And the Rams offense needs a good running back to function optimally. The Rams have looked much better since Matthew Stafford came back from his injury. They rolled up almost 400 yards against Cleveland's defense. Ravens are still missing Mark Andrews. They had some trouble spots against the Chargers themselves. I like Baltimore to win a lot this year. Mm-hmm. I love Lamar Jackson. 7's a lot of points to be given to the Rams. Give me the Rams +7 against the Baltimore Ravens.
All right. Where are you going with pick number 2?
Well, I would like to pick the Eagles, but I can't join the They Just Know How to Win parade. So give me, that's right, Jacksonville +3 in what could be the worst game of the week. Backup quarterback.
Whoa, wait a minute.
Jacksonville +3.
The Patriots-Steelers game we just talked about. That's a real challenge right there.
All right. Look, the over-under on this game is 30.5. It's going to be rain. It's going to be 20-mile-an-hour winds. It's two backup quarterbacks. But C.J. Beathard isn't terrible, and he's the second backup quarterback to be announced in this game. And that swung the market, I think, violently overreacting from -3 to +3. Here's the deal. Backup quarterbacks are terrible straight up, but historically they're not that bad against the spread because people see one and think, oh, we got to run for the hills. I think it's going to be a nasty conditions, slow, torturous, small, like low scoring game. And in those games, I like the underdog.
By the way, do we know if Flacco or DTR is playing yet for the Browns?
I think it's going to be Flacco. Flacco did all right, but they put up 19 points.
He was okay.
They put up 19 points because they can't run the ball right now. And their defense has not looked that good in the last couple of weeks.
Okay.
And Jacksonville's defense is good. All right. So, I mean, this is a toss-up to me. So, I'm going to go with the points.
All right. Well, I'm going to go with another.
Snake draft.
Snake draft.
Yeah.
Damn it, don't take mine, Jordan.
You get to go last. I'm going to go with another situation where there's backup quarterbacks facing off. And I'm going to take the Raiders getting 3 points at home against the Vikings. I think Josh Dobbs has shown that in small samples and maybe he's sort of like a modern Ryan Fitzpatrick, where like he'll lead you to a crazy comeback off the bench, but the more he plays, like the more unstable things get. I know they may get Justin Jefferson back, but the Raiders have been feisty under Antonio Pierce. I just don't think the Vikings should be favored by 3 on the road against almost anyone not named the Giants, Jets, or Patriots. So, plus, if you're into signals, as Peter is, tons of smart money coming in on the Raiders. There's a big edge in terms of 80% of the money versus 48% of the bets. So, at this point, it's picking which crappy team is the least crappy, and I'm going to go with the crappy Raiders.
Justin Jefferson, though. Justin Jefferson back.
I hear you.
He had 200 yards against the Raiders secondary.
It's dangerous. And now, wrapping it up, Charlotte, what do you got?
All right, I'm going to do the not crappy team of the Eagles. I'm taking them +3.5 at the Cowboys. They're getting tight end Dallas Goedert back this week. Zach Cunningham, the linebacker, should be ready. They also agreed to turn a one-year deal with Shaquille Leonard on Monday.
Shaq is back.
Yeah, so, you know, they're going to have some relief there, which has been a problem. And I'm not sure it's smart to bet against Dallas ever, the way Dak is playing. But I also think the Eagles are 10-2 and everyone's acting like they're undergoing a collapse, and I don't think they are. So I'm gonna say Eagles.
I love this pick. I think we're in for a shootout. I think the Eagles secondary is looking weak, maybe getting old. I think they're getting crushed over the middle. But I don't think they're these Dallas opponents who can't score that let Dallas run up these snowballing scores on them. And I think Dallas has been vulnerable to good offenses. Look at what the Seahawks did to them. Look what the Niners did to them. Look what Sam Howell put up 300 yards. I'll tell you something else. Dallas, 5.8 yards a punt return, 90 penalties this year. Those are horrible numbers, and at the margins in a game like this, they might matter. A.J. Brown's going to go wild.
All right, well, to recap, Charlotte has the Giants +6.5 against the Packers and the Eagles +3.5 against the Cowboys. Peter has the Rams getting 7 against the Ravens and the Jaguars +3 against the Browns.
Oh, those are bad
and I've
teams.
Got those. I've got Bailey Zappi and the Patriots getting 6 against the Steelers and the Raiders getting 3 against the Vikings.
I think Belichick's going to have gadget play. Who's the backup? Do we know?
Is what's his name? It's Cunningham, right?
It's not.
I've checked.
It's
out.
Not
Malik,
Mac. It's
Malik
the 13.
Cunningham.
Yeah, right. So I think we're going to see him roll out some gadget plays for the backup there.
I just can't believe I picked all NFC East teams. This is so embarrassing.
You're morphing into an NFC East fan. Oh my God. Love it, and we love having you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
We hope
what
you won't be a stranger.
Never.
Next time, maybe we could play at your house, like my mom used to tell me when we were kids. So
okay.
That
I was
wraps.
Like, I don't have a studio, Jordan. Yeah. And then I was like, oh, you mean the show? Yeah. Oh, God.
And we'll see you guys next week. The Underdogs Podcast is a production of Meadowlark Media and the DraftKings Network. Our show is produced by Sarah McCrory. Our executive producer is Neely Lohman. Follow us on Twitter at PeterKeatingNJ and at Jordan Brenner. Tell a friend and subscribe to the Underdogs Podcast anywhere you like to listen, and be sure to tune in again next week.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.